Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Linda Elmy from Variety Village. So tell me a little bit about Variety Village.
Well, Variety Village is a sports education and life skills facility in Southwest Scarborough. And we have 168,000 square feet of space here. It's inclusive and it's accessible. And we have over 6,000 members that participate in over 300 programs within the facility.
So when you say it's accessible, can you give me some examples of some of the features one would find?
Well, it's certainly wheelchair accessible and accessible to people who have mobility issues as well as visual impairments. And we adapt equipment such as in our cardio room and our weight room. We have equipment that can be adapted, the chairs swing away, for instance, so that wheelchairs can access the equipment, and we have attendants that assist in that process. And we also have programming within our aquatics facility as well as our field house activities on the basketball courts, et cetera, that allow participants to get into a wheelchair and experience wheelchair basketball, pillow polo, which is another sport that people do who have visual disabilities. And it's kind of reverse integration in that all of our members are both physically or visually or cognitively disabled, but we also have members who don't have disabilities. And all of our programs, except for one of our swim teams, are fully integrated. So you may be participating in wheelchair basketball with people who can actually walk and people who can't. It doesn't matter. So anyone can play, anyone can participate.
So, in your time with Variety Village, have there been any challenges?
I would have to say that our biggest challenge is probably our funding. We are a charity, and we're a private facility, so we do receive a little bit of government funding through a bilateral agreement with the federal government and the provincial government, but we have to make up about $3 million a year to cover our expenses and to run the facility. So we do that through direct donations from individuals, from corporations, and from major gifts.
So to look at the converse side of things, mm-hmm. in your time with the organization, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
That's a good question, because I would have to say I've been here 8 years, and I would say every day you see successes. We have people who come here with multiple challenges, and not just people that were born with disabilities. I mean, all of us at some point in life could become disabled, whether it's a car accident or a head injury or a stroke. We have a rehab program here as well. So you see people coming in here with say they were in a car accident and they come in here after their rehab and they're in a wheelchair, and a year later you see someone get out of that wheelchair and actually transfer into a walker, and then a few months later they're using a cane. And then in one example, for instance, it happened to a lady here. After a year and a half, she was walking on her own and she went back to work. So you see those kinds of little miracles every day, or it may just be a child who comes into camp for the first time. We have camps going on here right now. It's summertime, so we have multiple camps happening. And it may be a child who has never learned how to play with other children yet, and learning to do that over a period of a month. And all of a sudden the child is socialized and talking to other kids, and the parents are astounded. So I see all kinds of great moments every day.
So when you mention modified equipment, mm-hmm. can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Well, we have weight equipment and cardio equipment, as well as sport equipment that we can modify. For instance, we have in the cardio room a piece of equipment called a MotoMed, which is for people who have mobility issues, or maybe they're paraplegics and they can't exercise from the waist down. So the MotoMed is a machine that you will put your feet into these sort of pedals, and we strap them in, and then it's an automatic cycling machine. So muscles are being exercised, and they basically don't have to exert any of their own muscle to do that. So we have that, and then we have powerlifting platforms and weightlifting platforms that we can adapt for people, again, who use wheelchairs, and we assist with transferring and those kinds of things.
So if you could send any one message about the need for a facility such as this one, what would you say?
Well, there is a greater need. We are the only facility of our kind in Ontario with everything under one roof, and the space that we have here and the programs that we offer. We have over 6,000 members here, as I mentioned, and of those members, 50% of them have a disclosed disability. The percentage may actually be higher, but with a disclosed disability, we have the 50%. We have people who have needs and want to participate and want to socialize and want to be involved in programs and learning opportunities, and the facilities just aren't available.
So what are the next steps for Variety Village?
Well, the next steps for us is to try to grow. We are looking at expanding our programming into other communities, not necessarily building facilities, because we don't have the funding to do so. But we can certainly train the trainer in other city facilities, for instance, on how to adapt programs to include people with disabilities. We do that right now. We have an education and outreach program. We have a number of schools and organizations and community groups that either come here to our facility to learn how to include children or adults in programming, or we will go out to those groups and teach them how to do that as well. We also have grassroots programs, and we have had for years, that grow athletes right from the learning and grassroots identification level right up to podium level. And, for instance, we have five players that are participating in the Parapan Games on the men's wheelchair basketball team and the women's wheelchair basketball team that got their start here and all their training at Variety Village.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, thanks.
My thinking is Variety Village offers something unique to individuals with disabilities. But this shouldn't be a unique model. This should be something that should be adopted by more businesses, more recreational facilities, more services in general, in so much as individuals with disabilities have a right to access. They have a right to make use of any business or service the able-bodied community does. It's simply a matter of recognizing equality. simply a matter of saying to an audience or a consumer base out there that I want to be that someone who has something for individuals with disabilities. I want to make it so they recognize that they're welcome here. But by no means are organizations such as Variety Village shutting out the able-bodied populace. No. It has to be a balance between the able-bodied populace and the disabled community. If you can offer a service to everyone, a facility that's geared for the enjoyment or the betterment or the business of everyone in an equal environment, you're saying to the community at large that I believe in equality. I'm not just doing it because it's something that's mandated on paper. I'm not just going to meet the minimum standards. I'm not just going to skate by on a legal technicality. I'm going to be someone who truly embraces the ideals of equality, that all people have the potential to achieve and to create, and yes, even to grow stronger. By doing that, it sets a precedent, makes it that much easier for the community to look and say, this has worked. Why can't we adapt this model? Why can't we construct more fully accessible facilities? Why can't we offer something to this segment of the population? Why can't we be that voice that speaks for equality? Why can't we do this? In many cases, what it comes down to simply is a lack of ever thinking about it. Sometimes a person won't really ask the questions about disability life till someone presents it to them. But thinking about it for the first time or the millionth time, there's always growth to be had. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hi, Constable Ryan Burney here, police coordinator with Windsor and Essex County Crime Stoppers. Windsor Police Service now have a new page on their website called Wanted in Windsor. There are pictures of people within our community. They have arrest warrants out for them. To view the photos, simply go to www.windsorpolice.on.ca. If you know the whereabouts of any of these individuals, you're asked to call Crime Stoppers at 258-8477. That's 258-TIPS. Do not approach these people. They are considered dangerous. If you have any information about this or any other crime, contact us. Remember, you remain anonymous, you don't have to go to court, and you can earn a cash reward.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Linda Elmy from Variety Village. In this segment of our show, we'll be chatting about a subject near and dear to my heart, and I'm sure many of yours out there, accessible housing. Our favorite able-bodied observer, Samantha Newmarch, has a background in this, and she's agreed to share her insights. Tell me a little bit about some of the guidelines for accessible housing.
Well, they've recently extended the guidelines for accessible housing, and one of the main features that they are putting into new homes is that they're widening the doorways, making the master bedroom on the main floor, and also ensuring that, you know, most assets of the house will be accessible to people so that they can live in these houses long-term as opposed to just for a certain period in their life. So what flex housing means is that families will be able to move into a new home and facilitate having the grandparents, parents, and children all living in the same house, which is a huge trend that has been happening over the past, two decades, and even beyond that.
So one of the benefits of that would be certain elderly individuals would be more susceptible to disabilities. So this would be a benefit if they have families to care for them right there.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
and it's really beneficial for the families because they can ensure that the grandparents are getting proper care within the comfort of their own home and being around their family for the extra support that they need emotionally, physically, and mentally.
So, in your opinion, what brought about this trend towards more accessibility?
Well, in accordance with the boomer generation growing old, and because they are such a huge part of our demographic, I feel as though the boom in flex housing has come about because there's such a massive amount of elderly within our society today that we need to facilitate that generation. And by doing that, we've brought in flex housing, and it's growing exponentially.
So, do you see this trend continuing with more and more accessibility standards being put in?
Absolutely, I do. And along with flex housing, I also see green building materials being more frequently used.
So, what's society's reaction to all this, generally speaking? Are they in favor of the upgrades, or?
I would say they are definitely in favor, and it also allows for houses to be resold more quickly because they can facilitate a wider range of demographics.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Now, a little bit more on accessible housing, featuring past guest Gerard Taylor. So tell me a little bit about your insights into accessible housing.
Well, I've been a member of the Access Advisory Committee of Ontario for approximately 8 years. I have some knowledge on housing and the way things stand in the way of accessibility.
So, can you give me an idea of what some of the guidelines you've seen are?
Well, to qualify for accessible housing, you know, you have to have some sort of disability. Usually, accessible housing is for people with serious disabilities and are in wheelchairs for the most part. But you know, you do have your, you know, the blind, the, you know, people with lesser disabilities than some in accessible housing. And I think that's what takes up most of the spaces available.
So, what sorts of things can be put in place for a person with a disability?
Oh, there's all kinds of accessibility features that you can put into, say, just an apartment unit. For instance, when it comes to cooking, the stove is such that you can actually pull your wheelchair under the stove. Beside it, you'll have an oven approximately 3 feet off the floor that's built right into the cabinet to cook anything that you have to bake.
So, how does the community respond to having these features available?
Pardon me?
How does the community respond to the knowledge that there's such accessibility available to them?
Well, that's the problem. You know, I live in Sault Ste. Marie, and in Sault Ste. Marie, we have 134 apartment units that are accessible to people with disabilities. The population of Sault Ste. Marie, according to Census Ontario in 2011, was 79,800. So the ratio between availability and you know, not being the population is just there's quite a bit of big difference there.
So if you could send any message about why it's important to have accessible housing, what would you say?
Well, I would say that that presently 22% of the population of Canada is disabled in one way or another, and that it's going to take a real push from all levels of government to facilitate the accessibility needs of the near future. As you know, the baby boomers are coming of age now, and some of them are moving from accessible housing into senior housing, which is somewhat separate from the whole situation. But if the government took a real incentive at all levels, like I say, federal, provincial, municipal, and put some real money into accessibility, I think that our future would look good.
So what are your thoughts on the plans to make facilities fully accessible by 2025?
I think that's terrific that the province of Ontario wants to make everything accessible by 2025. However, they've already had 13 years to work on this. They only have another 10 years before 2025 comes up. And in the way of accessibility, there hasn't been a lot of change. I mean, although there's been some change, there hasn't been enough change really to facilitate people with disabilities.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
I sure will, Cam.
Accessible housing. There's no simple definition. As every disability affects a person differently, there's no one size fits all in terms of accommodations. Depends on the individual, their needs, their strengths, their level of mobility, what they found works for them. Fact of the matter is, they should have a voice in consulting as to where they're going to live, especially among the elderly and the aging populace. Fact is, these people have lived their lives with strength, with dignity, and facilities should exist for them. Shouldn't be an absurdly long waiting period. There should be availability. And yes, it would take an effort. It would take people pooling resources, time. But in the end, what it comes down to is the need of a person. A person with hopes and dreams and capabilities. And yes, even insights to share. And if we don't take into consideration what they would need, it's the same as saying, we could make the time, make the effort, but I don't think we're going to do that. And, well, it should be a priority in the minds of those who plan for this sort of thing, because disability has struck in every family. It's a question of recognition. One time or another, in every bloodline, there has been somebody with a disability, whether it was recognized at the time or not. And with the aging population, it's not just investing in someone else's future, it's investing in their own. It's recognizing that if they create the infrastructure now, that when the time comes that they might need such a facility, it will be there. It's in their own interests. It's easy to say, I don't need it today, so it doesn't matter. It's easy to say, I don't have an immediate relative or someone I know of who's been affected by this, so I don't need it. But that's short-sighted, and it's only looking at one's immediate circle. Disability life is about expanding the circle. It's about getting other perspectives, seeing the needs of others, and asking, how can I be that someone who fills that? How can I be that someone who stands beside such a person and helps them to reach their best. Having an accessible and a safe place to live is one of the most basic needs any of us has. For a person with a disability, it's no different. If it's so simple a matter as widening a doorway, why in the world wouldn't we do that? At the time a facility is constructed, nowadays you hear more and more that they are planning for accessibility. And not everything can be retrofitted, that's true. But at least taking the time to ask those questions, conduct a study, see what can be done realistically. At least that would be an effort, would be a start. Taking one positive step can lead to another very easily. Recognizing the needs of another and being someone who stands by and supports them, it's a chronic condition, but by no means is it a disability. It's an investment, not just in future leaders, but in your fellow human beings today. And I should say, an investment in one's own equality. One of the most important things shared in disability life and able-bodied life is the need to plan, the need to be prepared. And creating accessible housing today is preparing for a time when an aging populace will need that. But also, it's setting a precedent, it's setting a standard by which we can ask ourselves, this was good enough at the time, but how can we make it better? That's what it's all about, folks. Advancements. Improving on what's a standard today and saying to ourselves, what should the standard be tomorrow? But in terms of accessible housing and upkeep, Sam was very much correct that it is going to be a necessity that these homes are well maintained, so that when the torch is passed to the next person who will need it, they find it in good condition, in good shape, that it is something that can be of true benefit to them. Accessible housing, it's an ongoing process, and it may be difficult, it may be a lot of renovations, and yes, even a lot of monitoring once it's done, to make sure all the standards are met. But I guarantee you it's worth the investment. Giving a person with a disability a home to come to that they really feel that they can belong in, that meets their needs, that gives them the opportunity to focus on their strengths, their capabilities. Having the right resources available to them goes with a very simple principle. If a person's needs are met, they can achieve. If they're not struggling in day-to-day life with getting into their own home or maneuvering around this or that corner, these are not a concern. It's one fewer thing that a person with a disability has on their plate. They can redirect that energy towards something that contributes to society. And that betters us all. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.